Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your hosts for this weekend show. The first half of this weekend show, we're going to be focusing a lot on precious metals. Actually, quite frankly, we're focusing a lot on precious metals throughout this weekend show. But in the back half of the show, Chad and I are replaying a market quick take. So that's where you're going to get our thoughts on the volatility and correction, the very fast correction that we saw in precious metals, and a lot of the stocks, which really seem to be predicting that correction. And where we go from here. No one knows the future. And boy, oh boy, everyone has opinions on where this market could go. But now there is a wide range between the all-time highs and where the metals prices are trading, but then also some of the lows that were hit throughout that volatility. To kick off this show, we are chatting with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference this year, happening just before and right during Halloween. Brian, really curious to get your thoughts on that correction in gold and silver. The correction hit silver the hardest with one of the largest one-day moves down in silver on last Friday that also corresponded to massive volume in the markets and also in the underlying equities, even predicted a little bit before on Thursday before that drop. So, Brian, let's just get your thoughts. What's your takeaway from this volatility and that pretty significant one-day drop last Friday?
Yeah, you know, I just posted on X that, you know, it was, I remember way back like last year when we were all bemoaning the fact that we weren't getting any Western investor involvement and gold and silver. And, you know, those were good times back then. We didn't know what we were asking for. And precisely what we have gotten is, yes, we've gotten big money coming into the sector. The Western investors finally jumped on the bandwagon at the end of the summer, but they did so through the two traditional leverages to gold, silver and mining stocks that had yet to move. And they sure moved silver and they did move the mining stocks. And that's great. We had the great runs higher. But what you get along with that is the fickle nature of these traders. And you get much higher volatility, much steeper wiggles along the line. And that's what we've gotten. And interestingly, we talk about this volatility and we're actually settled into a pricing range. You know, we're up as we speak, we're all over $100. You know, yesterday or the day before, we would be down $100 or more. We had that tremendous volatility, a drawdown that you mentioned a week or so ago. And after all of this, we're down way back to the prices that we were trading at and very happy at 2 weeks ago. So it's really been interesting, but I think we are starting to base here. We're starting to get to a trading range of somewhere between 4,900 and, you know, 5,200 or something like that. And you can see that from momentum indicators like the Bollinger Bands are starting to pinch again. So it's going to be, I believe, and this is not any breakthrough analysis. I think everybody's saying this, that we're probably going to take a month or so of consolidation before the market really decides where it's going to go from here. And at that point, I think we're going to have fundamentals that are going to reassert themselves, the fundamentals that have been driving this market so far that have not changed. And so just sweat it out and, you know, get ready for the next rally once things calm down for a while.
Well, Brian, just two points, two questions on that. One is we did see a lot of the generalists flocking into the sector. We were noting that silver had almost become a meme stock in its own, and it was surging up so much on a daily basis for a couple of days there that there were some crazy things going around. And a lot of people that couldn't spell silver, even at the end of last year, suddenly jumped into it right before the corrective move. The same thing at the conferences, at the Metals Investor Forum and the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. A lot of people were standing outside of booths and literally buying stock as they were talking to the company there at the booths on the Friday and the Monday. lot of those people top ticked the market and saw a big correction, and maybe they just got into it. Do you think that hurt generalist investors, question one? And number two, to the point you just made about the consolidation and kind of digesting these moves, do you think we finally see the metal stocks, especially gold and silver, catch up in valuation to where the metals actually are?
Yeah, I think we do. We've talked about this a number of times, and they've started to do that. Yeah, one of the charts that I put up at Metals Investor Forum showed the tremendous run that Agnico Eagle has made over the last 18 months or so, and it looks like it's overvalued. But then if you look at its P/E ratio, it really is at the lower end of its historic range still, because the metals have risen much more than. And their profits have risen so much more than their share price. So that story will develop. And I think the mining stocks will eventually, and they have been on occasion outperforming gold, but they have a lot of room to make up to really trade more in accordance and appropriately to where the metals prices are right now. And I think that's the levered option. The key, as I said at the in my presentations in Vancouver, is that you have to take profits. And I think everybody was saying that. Everybody that you should be listening to, at least, was saying that you have to take profits. You have to trim along the way. You can't time the market. You cannot go totally in and out. You're not going to buy back these positions at lower prices and have another run at them. But as you get profits, you take some of that. Skim some of that froth off of your portfolio, take it out of the market, redeploy some of it, but you constantly, in these kinds of markets, you constantly and consistently need to take money out of the market and put it aside safely. Take those chips off the craps table and put them in your pocket. And that's the lesson of these markets. And I think we're going to have more opportunities ahead.
Yeah, we totally agree with that whole concept of taking some profits. We've been talking about it a lot too, but hey, a lot of people just think it's just going to keep running higher. And we do need to remember, especially when you're invested in the juniors, these are small cap stocks. They can be volatile. And when they give you these kind of multiple gains that they did over the last year, it's a great idea to take some profits. We even heard that from some of the legends on stage too. That was a lot of the talk of the conference, of some of the big name guys saying, it's bubbly, and quite frankly, you should be taking profits. But Brian, just talking about the price action here, silver bounced on Tuesday and Wednesday, but then Thursday had another rough day. And quite frankly, I think a lot of people were thinking that $75 level would hold, but it has even dropped a little bit below there and then is now bouncing as we record this on Friday on the futures market, right around that $75 level. How important in your eyes is it to hold some of these levels, or even more so, some of these moving averages that these prices corrected down to? And even for gold in the mid 4,000s, 4,500 in around there, gold has recovered a bit more. But look, this is no longer a momentum trade. It could be if it starts moving higher, but how important is it to hold some of these at least near term, short term, lower levels that the correction hit?
Yeah, I think it is important. It looks like silver is rotating or oscillating around $75. I forget which day at this point. It's been such a blur, but it was down like 10% the other day. Now it's, as we speak, it's up 8%. But it is oscillating around that $75 level or so. And I think that's probably an important point. And you have to go way back to, geez, like December to get prices below $70. And so we've been on a wild ride. Gold itself, I don't know that it's going to get back to 5,500 very quickly. And frankly, I hope that it doesn't. I think 4,900 and yeah, 5,000 would be great. But I do think we need to mark some time now to kind of assuage the market that we're not going to drop back below $4,000, or we're not going to drop back into the 60s or lower for silver. And if the metals can prove that they've still got that underlying demand, I think the fundamentals will again become important and recognized by the market as we go forward.
Well, Brian, when you're valuing companies in your own portfolio or when you're talking to your subscribers at Gold Newsletter, What kind of metals assumptions do you use as far as looking forward? Because to your point, and it's tongue in cheek that we have to go all the way back to December, things have moved so much in a month or two that it's really hard for even the companies to keep up with these prices. I was joking with some of them at the conferences that, hey, your slide decks, metals assumptions are pretty outdated. Your upside case is, $40 or $50 silver. We're at $100 silver at the time. Or hey, your upside case in gold was 3,500 or 4,000. At the moment we were there, it was over 5,000. So how do you find the middle ground here on how you want to value companies? Because you should, at least if a forward-looking market is really looking forward, you should be looking at where you think metals prices will average. What prices are you using to value developers or even producers or even the value of what a explorer finds in the ground?
Well, I don't think that the companies I'm looking at, that gold at $5,000, silver at $100, even factors into the equation. I'm looking at companies like, let's say, Banyan, that has, 7 million ounces, but everybody knows they can get to 10 if they want to. And it's currently valued at like US $45 an ounce in the ground. And I look at the fact that those kinds of deposits in the past have sold for $150, $200, even hundreds of dollars per ounce in the ground in markets that don't even approach what we have right now. So I don't even need to try to factor their value in at $5,000 gold because the M&A environment has yet to factor in those levels. I just have high confidence that they are going to get sold if they're able to hold out long enough for 4 to 5 times or more their current value, market valuation. So the important thing at these juniors, which are not producing metal at these prices, it is not so much where prices are, but what direction they're heading. Market sentiment is not based on price levels, it's based on price direction. So if the price is falling, then I want to be hesitant on buying really anything because I should be able to get these juniors at cheaper prices in the future because market sentiment is going to be in the dumps if the price trend is down. If the price trend is up, then you have to grab opportunities while you can because it's very likely in a few months they're going to be trading much higher. On that Friday of the Metals Investor Forum, where I wasn't speaking, but I walked around and I talked with a bunch of companies and got updates. Silver shot through $100 and pretty easily went up to about 103 or so. And then, I went up to my room around midday, my hotel room, and I sold some silver positions and looked really smart and felt really smart. But then I went and bought more than I sold in the juniors that I had just talked to. And frankly, I think those purchases I made that day are still up. So, good companies with good stories, with good things coming up, good catalysts coming up, have been fairly resilient in this downdraft because there's a short-term view that they are going to make good achievements, they're going to get good drill results, they're going to have good news. And then there's a long-term view that this too shall pass. And in the metals, the fundamentals will come back to the fore, and we're going to renew this uptrend.
So, Brian, to that point, you are right. If the metals are going higher, everyone's excited and the stocks benefit from that. If they're going down, then people get nervous and they don't necessarily chase these stocks. We have just entered earnings season. And I know you focus a bit more on the smaller companies, but Barrick kicked it off with us on Thursday. It was not a good day for the metals. And even though Barrick knocked it out of the park, vastly beat estimates on a lot of the key metrics, including earnings. The stock dropped 8% as we're recording this on Friday, a better day for the metals, but the stock's only up about 2-2.5%. Do we need to be watching these earnings really closely to see how the market reacts to them as a gauge of sentiment, or is there something else we can look to?
I think you get an idea of the sentiment from the metals prices. Again, if it's a bad day, and boy, what bad timing Barrick had, huh, to come out with those great results on that day and get slaughtered for it. So really, the sentiment is already being reflected and determined really by what the metals are doing. If we put a couple of days together in gold and silver, where silver's up 8% a day, and gold's up $178.5 or over 3.5% like it is today, you get a couple of days in a row of that, and sentiment is going to recover very quickly, because sentiment right now is very short term and backward looking, because we have so much more speculative interest in the metals. And what's really interesting right now is, you look at positioning on COMEX, and open interest is really at low levels. So we haven't had that speculative fervor in the futures in the West. A lot of what we're seeing in terms of volatility is coming from futures exchanges, the Shanghai Futures Exchange from China and in the East. And that's interesting and different. We've never seen that before. We've never seen price trend following by Asian investors before in the metals market. They've typically bought physical and bought on price declines and supported the market and were more bargain hunters. But now they're chasing the price upward, as Western investors were wont to do in every previous bull market.
Well, Brian, I know you like to follow the exploration side of the business, and there's been a ton of capital raised by the junior sector over the last year. There's a lot of compelling drill programs going on. There's a lot of data backing up at the assay labs, and we're in that weird seasonal run between the Vancouver conference season and the Toronto conference season with PDAC. And this is where all this news is going to start hitting. So we're already seeing it. And there was a ton of news in front of the Vancouver conference season, but now we're going to have all that news leading into the PDAC over the next month or so. So in addition to earnings, we're going to get flooded with drill results. Any companies you're excited about? Any trends you're excited about?
Yeah, a lot of them, and as I scroll through my portfolio and gold newsletter, it has expanded well beyond, where it should be. I can't, and as I look at companies I want to kind of cull from the portfolio, it's really difficult because there are some great stories, great opportunities out there. And as I go through it, I had a great meeting with Aris Minerals, which is not, one of the hot stories out there right now. Copper, gold, porphyries in Kazakhstan, they have about $100 million market cap. I look at what they have and the drilling that they are going to do over the next year, and they have three targets, at each of which could send this company to a $1 billion valuation over the next 12, 18 months. I really like that story. I don't think it's getting the attention it should right now. Astra Exploration has a great target. They've kind of been quiet lately, not getting enough attention from the market. I think they're a great play over the next few months, really. What else do I like now? I like Miata Metals. That's a new recommendation in the newsletter. I'm kind of hesitant to mention that because I'm trying to buy it myself. They've got a great project in Suriname that they're following the playbook of Omai Gold over the last 18 months. And if you know what that stock did, you know the potential there. I continue to like Relevant Gold, but it's a longer story, longer term story, that they're doing a lot of drilling over the next year that it very likely could come up with a big discovery. So yeah, lots of opportunity out there. I like Tiger Gold, another new recommendation. It's in Colombia and in a great belt. One company that has not moved yet that And I own, I think, all of the companies I just mentioned, by the way. But Tor Metals, it's a recommendation of mine that has not worked out yet, but they're very smart. And I think they're on the track of a new porphyry discovery in BC. And great team, great story, great theory that has been proven out in terms of everything except grade at this point. And they're still drilling, so a lot to come there.
One thing I picked up from that, Brian, outside of kind of the last stock, there's you're looking at some jurisdictions that people haven't talked about for years, if not a decade. I guess it shows the fact that we are in a bull market here. And as one of the jokes going around the conferences is that it's not just tier one targets that are getting drilled right now. Everyone has so much money that they're drilling tier two, tier three, even tier five targets looking for something. And that also includes going to different jurisdictions. What does that mean for this market then? Has everything in the safe jurisdictions just run too much and now we're all seeking value somewhere else? Or is there something else happening in the exploration world that has opened up these new jurisdictions?
No, I don't think anything is happen to open them up, but I do think that money and attention is rising. And a lot of these companies, I mean, so many of the companies in the junior exploration space were really cash strapped, as you well know, over the last 3, 4, 5 years. So they were forced to do a lot of the boring work, relatively inexpensive work, non-drilling work on their properties and get everything ready and advance them, knowing that where the drill targets were, but not having the money to actually drill them. So when the sector all of a sudden got this flood of new financing, new money in, they were like horses, coming out of the starting gate. And we have a lot of great targets getting the attention of the drills now. So we're getting a lot of really good results and more to come. There are companies that aren't, the market's attention is fickle and the sector in general is very inefficient. So there are companies with great projects that are temporarily forgotten, and those represent opportunities. So across the board, I see lots and lots of opportunities here. And, I am still buying.
Well, Brian, as we know, with all the money raised and all the targets, unfortunately, the law of averages is not in the company's favor. As people always say, you do have better odds in Las Vegas than you do to take a target and turn it into an economic mine. I think 1 in 3,000 targets ends up becoming an economic mine. So the reality is the vast majority of the money raised is going to get blown on targets that don't work out. And that's just the game. That's the exploration process. But are you surprised that considering all of the money that has been raised over the last year and all the drill targets, people throw the word discovery out there like candy, like, oh, we've made a discovery because they just hit anything. But we haven't had a lot of new snow lines or newfound golds or new silver crests. We haven't had these amazing world-class discoveries. There's been a few, and there's been some that have run. And, usually they stand out and they're the talk of the town. Why do you think we aren't seeing more discoveries? And are you hopeful that out of all of this money being spent, we do get a few new of those big world-class discoveries?
Yeah, I think we're going to get some number of them over the next 12, 18 months. I, could point to a number of companies that have really exciting targets that could develop. I mentioned Relevant. I think Prospector has the potential of being one of those really big discoveries in the Yukon over the next drill season, where they're going to get a lot of drills turning. So a lot of companies have the first sniffs of big discoveries. And you're right. Whether these discoveries, in quotation marks, become mines in reality, it's still a long shot. They might be great projects, but the market may go away from them. They may miss the cycle, et cetera, et cetera. We have to remember that as junior mining sector speculators, we're not in it from discovery to actual production typically. Where we're in it is for a 12 to 20 to maybe 30 month window where something, an idea becomes a discovery, then the scope of that discovery is realized, and we want to miss those two bellies in the Lassonde curve. So we want to be in for the discovery and out before things get boring. And it's that boring part where a mine is made or a mine is not made, and we just don't want to be there.
Has the market started to change though? Because even some of these, what look like pretty good projects, some of which have been around for a while, some are fairly new. Everyone's so focused on getting into early stage operations, mining at a small scale or shipping their ore somewhere so someone else can process it. In a way, it makes the money and it makes sense because then they don't need to go back to the capital markets to continue to expand on their asset. But it is arguably sometimes taking away a high-grade component, taking away the easy mining aspect of these assets because, again, these companies don't want to go back to the market. But I do also think that takes away some of the M&A potential of these assets. So is the market changing on us here, Brian, where the juniors just aren't getting acquired either because the majors aren't going that far down the food chain, or also because they've switched their strategy and instead of showing scale here and now, they're starting to mine and show scale later on?
Yeah, the market, that's another salient feature of this market. We're The markets rhyme, but they don't repeat exactly. And that's one of the unique aspects of this market is that right now there's so much money being thrown out of it. And, there's so much generalist money out there, huge oceans of capital sloshing around the world looking for a home. And just a little bit of it leaking into the junior mining sector has a tremendous result. So companies can raise a lot of money right now at fairly non-dilutive levels to advance their projects. A $40 million financing is, used to be a $10 million financing or a $5 million financing. So companies have the option now of actually telling the majors, well, we're going to develop this ourselves, or at least we have the capability to, so they don't have to take a stink bid for their projects from a major. They have that option. It's no longer just a bluff in negotiations with the major. They have the ability to do it. And the old reality was that you don't want to do that because you're an explorer. You don't have the expertise to be a producer. But with this kind of money, number one, they can buy the expertise or at least rent it. And the other thing is, when you have $3,000, $3,500 of margin in your product, then in your gold production, you could afford to make some mistakes. You could lose $1,000 of AISC and making really dumb mistakes and still have one of the historically most profitable operations like that we've ever seen. So there's just so much money to be made from mining an ounce of gold right now that a junior who has that option, in some cases, is the right way to go.
It is. And I understand that mentality, but I do think it's starting to change or should change the mentality for investors because once a mine starts operating, especially at a small scale, these majors don't necessarily come in and take it out. And then that just questions how long it will operate through the current cycle. And well, we're even questioning right now how long this cycle is going to last. It's already been an amazing run for a lot of these stocks. Many stocks are up five times where they were just last year, if not even more. How much more upside is there? We'll need to watch the metals price and also watch some of the rebound. Some of these stocks have rebounded hard. Some are still kind of trending lower, but this is also just short-term action. So again, time will tell. It's what we're going to stay on, but it's not the same kind of euphoric mentality that it was just 2 weeks ago. So a lot for us to always consider and talk about. And look, a lot for us to keep talking to you about throughout this year. But thanks for sharing some of those stocks. Those were some new names to myself and I think even to Shad. So something for us to also look into there. Brian, as always, great having you on the weekend show. Thanks for your time. It was a pleasure seeing you in Vancouver. And for everyone listening, visit our website, podcast, YouTube channel. That's where you can get links to the Gold Newsletter to follow along with Brian if you aren't already. And everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back for the KER Market Quick Take to wrap up this show.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.